So, as a content warning for this episode, we just want to make people aware that obviously we're going to be talking about mental health issues over the course of this episode. We have not started recording yet, so I don't know exactly what may be difficult or triggering for others, but I do want to make you aware that if you're in a negative headspace right now and think that you would be easily That would be easily exacerbated by discussions of depression, anxiety, and so on, then you may want to wait until you are feeling somewhat better to listen to this episode. Hail and welcome to Circle Talk, a podcast for seekers, initiates, and the curious by four Alexandrian witches with endless different opinions. We are your hosts.
Hi, I'm Peter, a high priest and coven leader from South Wales.
Hi, I'm James, a high priest and coven leader from just outside New Orleans, Louisiana.
Hi, I'm Josie, a high priestess and coven leader near Melbourne, Australia.
And I'm G, a high priestess and coven leader from outside Boston in Massachusetts. And we are a podcast where we talk about Alexandrian witchcraft and explore differing opinions on how the Alexandrian tradition is practiced in various covens and around the globe. Listeners are reminded that while we are all initiates of the Alexandrian tradition, we only speak for ourselves and not the tradition as a whole, which is an impossible thing to do. This is episode 3 of season 3. If it's your first episode, welcome. You may want to take a moment to pause this and go back to listen to our introductory episodes, episode 0, Introductions, and episode 1, Definitions, or check them out after you enjoy this one. In this episode, we're going to be talking about mental health and the craft, how mental health affects our work, what to do in times of crisis, and practices that may help support your mental health. We also touched upon the subject of mental health in episode 3 of season 2 during our In Bulk and Lammas episode, where we spoke about purification. So check out that episode for some insightful discussions. Robert Anton Wilson, an American author, futurist, psychologist, and self-described agnostic mystic, said, "Under the present brutal and primitive conditions on this planet, every person you meet should be regarded as one of the walking wounded. We have never seen a man or woman not slightly deranged by either anxiety or grief. We have never seen a totally sane human being." Robert's words are no truer than in today's society of balancing mounting work pressures from all angles with staying afloat in our personal lives with friends and family. So, with that said, high five, get on the broomstick, and let's go, witches. Peter, was that quote your addition? Oh, nice job. That's a great quote. Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So, we're going to start our discussion with just a general discussion of neurodiversity and the way that neurodiverse people fit into the coven space. So, what are our thoughts as coven leaders? Does a neurodivergent person have to change in order to practice in a coven space?
I know that we've spoken quite a lot in the past on previous episodes that the coven isn't going to change for a new incomer, like a new initiate. I don't think that's 100% true in the fact that there are accommodations that can be made within Circle, whether that is to do with, dietary requirements, not drinking alcohol, not using certain substances. You might be on a calorie controlled diet, for example. That's all to do with like your physical stuff. But if you suffer from mental health issues, then that is also an accommodation that can be made in Circle. I think it's important that when you have initial discussions, that forms part of the initial discussions with your high priestess, with your high priest, because I've said it loads of times, if we don't know, we can't help, kind of thing.
Around having to change as a neurodivergent person, not necessarily, probably shouldn't, but it's about finding, and we've spoken about this in multiple episodes, finding the coven that's the right fit for you and it's going to work for you as well. As a neurodivergent practitioner myself, that's probably the best advice I can give.
Both the individual and the coven are going to change anytime there's new membership. But I don't think that's what the question's getting at. I don't think there's any need to become non-neurodivergent or attempt to be, because that's not the way it works. You don't. So that expectation shouldn't exist. It's really about finding the group that works for you, like Josie said. Is this a group of people whom you can work with, and vice versa?
I agree with that, of course. I do think that it is incumbent upon every human being to understand when something isn't working for them and make changes as needed. So I think this is true in a professional environment, right? For example, like if you struggle with seasonal depression and getting up early and getting to work on time when it's still dark is a real difficulty. I would not suggest that work for me. I would not suggest that work needs to accommodate that. It would not be possible in my line of work for my job to accommodate that. Instead, I've bought like a sunrise lamp that mimics the sunrise. So when I'm getting up at 4:30 in the morning, it's like I still have sunshine coming in my room, for example, right? I have a lot of memory issues, possibly secondary to taking medication, possibly secondary to not having slept for 20 years, it feels like. So I don't expect anybody else to compensate for my memory issues. I keep a calendar. I set 50,000 reminders on my phone all day. I have a to-do list app, right? I've come up with means of compensating for these issues that I have in order to make me effective in my job and in my place. And I think, you know, you want a coven that can be forgiving and understanding that we're all human and we all have faults and we all screw up sometimes and double book ourselves, like we were talking about before the episode, or, you know, struggle with memorization or whatever. But I don't think it's reasonable to say to a coven, well, I'm just always late. So you know, I'm going to be late. Well, no, I expect that you're going to do your best to improve on getting somewhere on time, right? I expect that that will not be perfect, but I still expect to see some attempt at improvement. And I think most people end up learning some different skills when they're joining a new group, whether that's a group of friends, a new job, whatever, a coven, to meet the expectations, like the professional expectations of that group.
Yeah, any coven you join is already going to have expectations, and that's not necessarily something that's going to change for you for the most part. In education, we call these workarounds that neurodivergent adults have that they use. I use a few myself. I'm not great with like body language, for instance, so I've learned like the questions to ask and the things to.
And I think that's a really good transition into tackling rejection. So, for those of us who kind of struggle with human interaction or who have anxiety disorders, almost anything can seem like a massive rejection of you as a human being, and it can feel really personal. So, what are some workarounds that we can use for that?
I don't have much of an answer directly there, but I do want to make sure I point out that it is not part of the crafts approach or the Alexander traditions approach to reject any one group of people whole hog. And that includes people with mental health conditions or personalities or whatever it may be. So maybe start from that understanding that the answer isn't starting from no. That's all I got.
Rejection sensitive dysphoria is a fancy word for this, and it's experienced by a lot of different neurospicy folks. And one really good thing that's helped a few people that I know is having like a mantra or being able to tell yourself and get into a place where you can believe this is that people aren't talking about you as much as you think. Nobody's thinking about you as much as you think, good or bad. And that can really, I don't know, that can really help in this kind of space.
And I think that taking rejection is a two-sided coin, isn't it, really? I know we spoke about in our last episode, or at least I spoke about those five C's of communication. I'm not going to repeat them, but I think being clear on both sides of the coin is really important. And if a coven decides not to pursue the relationship with you that you wanted, there's a responsibility from the coven's point of view to say why. There might be a myriad of reasons, and I don't necessarily think that one of the valid reasons is, oh, because you have mental health issues. You know, no one is going to turn around and say, because you have depression or because you have anxiety, you know, we're not going to consider you for coven training or initiation, because I just don't think that many covens do that. There probably are covens out there that do that. And, you know, going back to what we said earlier about finding the right coven for you, if you live in a rural area, an area where there's not many covens, unfortunately, that might have been the closest coven, but it just means that you've got to branch out a little bit. We've spoken about in previous episodes, people traveling by multiple planes and taking numerous car journeys and train journeys and everything to find a coven that fits well with them, that will accept them for who they are and be able to work with them. And that might be the next option. If you're rejected from the coven closest to you, maybe there's a bigger plan at play. Maybe there's a better, air quotes, a better coven out there for you. So if that does happen, just maybe branch out a little bit. If you live in an inner city, there's probably going to be so many covens available that you swing a cat and you can hit five of them, kind of thing. So yeah, just maybe branch out a little bit, but having a mental health issue is definitely not a, like James said, it's not a no.
Josie's face is saying, not in Australia, it isn't.
It's just typing in the chat brackets, unless you live in Australia, and then a bunch of crying emojis.
Not true for all continents.
I was 100% sitting here thinking it, and he's like, "Oh, you just gotta branch out a little ways." And I was like,
Yeah.
"What, drive for a day?"
Yeah. Just
No,
walk out the door. 10 covens just out
that's
there.
why I
Oh,
that's
in
why I
Boston.
said multiple plane journeys.
In London, you can't swing a cat without hitting a coven. That's for sure true. In Louisville, you can't swing a cat.
The joke I hear is you can't cast circle without bumping into a gardenerian.
Right. You can't drive through town without getting accidentally initiated. Isn't that it?
Look, I said what I said. Sorry, Josie.
Fine. She's not bitter.
Not at all.
Welcome to Circle Talk, Three Witches.
For different reasons.
Yeah, for different reasons.
I would suggest that, much like if you get rejected from a job that you wanted and you might email the hiring committee or whoever you were communicating with and ask for feedback on your application, that if you get rejected from a coven, I would encourage you to reach out professionally and say, could you, if you were not offered a reason, could you please, ask for a reason for the rejection. I think it's really frustrating. Like, the caveat to that is it's really frustrating for people when they get, you just weren't a good fit. And unfortunately, it's really hard sometimes when it just really isn't a good fit. Like, when it's like, I can't explain why, but like the personalities weren't jiving, the energy didn't feel right. It's not personal. It's just one of those things that happens sometimes. That's an unfortunate feeling because there's very little to be done about that. But most of the time, the reason that you'll get might be a little bit more clear, like, we're very concerned about your time commitment abilities, and we really need someone who can be here every week. Or, I'm sorry, we're not accepting people under the age of 21 at this time, or what have you. I think what Josie was talking about, like, countering that negative discourse, right? That's just an important skill for us all to develop. And so part of that is believing what other people tell you. So if the coven does say, listen, it's not personal, it just really wasn't a good fit. Part of the negative discourse you have to counter is they're adults, they're professionals who are communicating with me. I have to believe them when they say it just was about the way that people fit together. I have to believe them when they say it's simply that, they're not prepared to meet my dietary, or they're not prepared to meet my allergy needs because they have five cats, whatever. Just take people at their word, as much as you can.
And I guess rest assured also in that, like, coven leaders have probably agonized over this before they tell you no. It's not just like, don't like his face.
Agree. As coven leaders, what would we like? I know that we've sort of emphasized before, but let's take a moment again. What would we like to hear from neurodivergent seekers, as part of the initial discussions when meeting a new coven?
I think it's definitely a green flag when somebody has mental health issues and they are confident enough to speak openly to a certain degree about the mental health issues that they currently have or have faced in the past, because that can then kind of lead the conversation from a coven leader's point of view about how we can in future accommodate best for those needs. I would definitely flag that up as a green flag. It's nice as well if seekers ask, are there any other neurodivergent people within the coven? And if so, would it be possible to meet them as well and get kind of gauge their reaction about how they, because obviously as a seeker, you're not in the coven yet. And if there are neurodivergent people within the coven that are willing to speak to you, that might better enable you to form your decision, because even when a coven says, okay, yeah, we've, you've gone through maybe some sort of outer court training, which is something that some covens have prior to initiation. You've gone through that training with us. We think that you're a good fit. We're offering you that chance for initiation. You might turn around and say, oh, well, actually, I've come to the conclusion that this possibly isn't the coven for me. And that streak works both ways. Yes, a coven can say no, but you also have the right to say no back to a coven. You might be looking for a coven with other neurodivergent people because you think that that coven will then have a better experience and understanding of what you could have possibly gone through or are going through. And if the coven doesn't have any neurodivergent people, that might form your answers. Or actually, do you know what? I'm looking for a coven that does already have neurodivergent pupils, I was going to say then. Neurodivergent people. And no, like, thank you, but no. So yeah, couple of green flags there.
So mental health concerns are real concerns. And as with all concerns that you have regarding coven membership, whether it's this or Skyclad practice or anything else, those need to be looked at and discussed openly and freely between yourself and the coven leadership. It may not have to happen in your initial introduction contact. You probably should not start your introduction email with, "Hi, I'm so and so, and I have depression." But it definitely needs to come up. It needs to be discussed well in advance of initiation for yourself, in addition to Coven leadership's perspectives, because we need to know each other. We need to delve into, is this a group whom can be part of your support network? In addition to, are we prepared to accommodate appropriately? And generally, the answer to that is yes, but the conversation has to happen and not just be assumed. Always, always have the conversations with any concerns.
I do want to say that this is not without risk, but it's risk that's necessary to take. For example, I could see where a coven might say, "Listen, it was very nice to meet you, but we are not prepared to have a student or initiate someone who's within 1 year of addiction recovery, right? Who just started their addiction recovery journey." That would feel really shitty if you were the seeker, but there are very valid reasons for why a coven might be reticent to initiate somebody in that situation. For example, go back and listen to our episode on initiations for why there might be some reticence there, right? A coven leader might say, "Honestly, unfortunately, we're not prepared to work with an individual who has your mental health needs or mental health issues or what have you." I'm not going to say that won't feel shitty, but I do think you're much better off knowing that the coven is like not going to be willing to work with you than to not discuss that ahead of time and get several months into training with the coven, have it come out and have to deal with the separation at that point. So that would be unfortunate. I agree with Peter that it would be rare for a coven to say something about like that, just for someone who's dealing with some depression and anxiety, what have you. But you've divulged these things so that people can make appropriate choices and do what's best for everybody. So I would encourage seekers to be open about their needs. Understand that that comes with risk, but it's a really necessary risk, and it'll avoid everybody being hurt and upset later, in my opinion. So if you have joined a coven, and you have some mental health issues, how would those kinds of things affect your coven practice? And I guess I'm hesitating. I want to go back a moment and just say we're speaking in really broad strokes in this episode, right? We're kind of talking about everything from neurodivergence in the terms of like ADHD or an autism diagnosis to people who have addiction recovery to people who are dealing with depression, anxiety, possibly bipolar disorder, possibly other mental health issues. Like, these are all really different things. And these like neuropsychological situations all have their own impacts, treatments, symptoms. Like, everything is obviously unique to each person as well. So maybe I'll add that to our content warning, but this is really broad strokes And I just want to acknowledge that and I guess apologize for the fact that we're going to have to be making some generalizations here. People should understand that every coven and every individual is unique. And so their own interactions with their own coven are going to be different, right? So, that having been said, obviously different mental health issues could affect the coven differently. But generally speaking, people who have different kinds of like neuropsychological needs or who are dealing with maybe the most common issues we see, depression, anxiety, how could that affect the coven practice?
I think one of the big things that might affect coven practice is that if you have, for example, like you just said, depression or anxiety, you might not turn up to circle for a long time, and then you kind of fall into that vicious circle of I haven't gone, so I feel out of the loop. I'm out of the loop because I haven't gone, and that mentality is just kind of keeps going round and round and round and round. And I think the best way to alleviate that, even though we understand that it is very, very difficult, is to speak to your high priestess, your high priest, the coven elders, and just kind of make them aware of what your concerns are. I think a lot of these, not like issues in air quotes, can be alleviated by ensuring that you are in communication with your high priest or your high priestess. If you're missing coven regularly because of your mental health, then I think that your mental health has to come first. Whether that is seeking professional medical help from your doctors or from other professional, maybe talking therapies. If you're really struggling, then the very last thing you want to do is feel even shittier because you're missing out on coven practice. So, seek that help and make sure that it is professional help because, magic can help and witchcraft can help, but it shouldn't take place of professional medical help. Unless you are a coven leader or a coven member and you are a trained psychologist or a trained medical professional, we shouldn't really be giving medical advice out just because we're not trained. I can't, I can say, have you tried this? Have you tried that? From a very general point of view, but when it comes to the specifics of a condition that needs to come first.
I know we talked about it earlier, but joining a group is going to change you in the group. And it's just the way it's built. We all exist in the various planes of existence all at once. That includes the mental, emotional planes, etc. And that's going to tie to the whole of the group and the egregore. And that's going to have an impact, but likewise, it's going to have an impact on you. I don't know that I can delve more than that, just from my own lack of experience. So I'm going to shut up and listen.
I think even from a mundane perspective, if you suffer from a mental health issue and you're being asked to bring certain things to coven, and that might feel really overwhelming, that can that might have a knock-on effect to something else. If you've been asked to bring the frankincense for an incense making workshop kind of thing, and then you forget, that's not a massive deal, but it does mean that if frankincense is an ingredient that is important to that incense, then maybe, you're gonna have to think on your feet a little bit as coven leaders or as people making the incense kind of thing. I think one of the best ways to alleviate that is maybe do what G does and set 50 million reminders, like remember frankincense, remember frankincense, remember frankincense. Like put it on a little sticky note somewhere that you're gonna see every day. Put it on the mirror, Coven Friday. Remember frankincense, because we do have a certain responsibility as coven leaders to ensure that our coven members know what to bring. But it can also be tasking and tolling on us if we're having to send out constant reminders time and time again, just that, maybe just set an alarm on every day for like 10 a.m. Bring frankincense or bring whatever. Yeah.
I kid you not, I have a ritual I'm planning on doing in April that I have already put like five reminders in my phone about, like 2 weeks ahead of time. I need to do the shopping. Like 10 days ahead of time, I need to make sure that I've got an altar ready to go in temple, 7 days, and so on. Not because it actually takes this much time to do these things, but because I know myself and I know that if I don't have reminders in my phone, it will be the day before I want to start the ritual and I'll have nothing ready to go. I signed up to make lasagnas for a school dance next Friday. I don't know why they're having lasagna. That's a separate question. I have like three reminders in my phone starting on Sunday about like buying the ingredients for the lasagna, making the lasagna, freezing the lasagna, like because I know I won't do it. And I don't want to say I'm always this good. I'm not always this good, but I've been in therapy for like 25 years at least, and I've had to function through school and grad school, and I've learned workarounds, right? And so I do think that's really important. And I do think it's reasonable to ask your coven leader, especially if you're very specific. I'm going to set my own reminders. Will you be sending out a reminder a week ahead of the who's bringing what list? Or would you mind emailing the ritual ahead of time so I can look things over before I come, just to make sure I don't have to think of any questions on the spot, right? Those are very reasonable accommodations that most coven leaders ideally will be able to meet you halfway with. But it is really important to understand that your coven leader, I feel like we've talked about this before, it should not be placed on a pedestal, is not a spiritual mentor, is not a psychologist in any way, shape, or form, is at most a teacher of the Alexandrian tradition. And that's really all I can promise you. And so a lot of your self-development comes from you and the growing that you have to do as part of this learning and craft. I don't think mental health issues affect one's magic, ideally, if one is able to be mostly rational, or I guess not. I think that the danger lies when someone is, and we'll talk about this more later, but when someone is in irrational to the point where they're assigning overly magical explanations for negative things in their life.
Yeah, whatever size it is, a coven provides the space for you to do that improvement. But like you said, it's not the role of the coven leadership to do anything other than sort of teach Alexandra and Wicca the way that that coven does it. Like, they're not psychologists and whatever. It's just about being upfront. It's about being upfront about, like Peter said, things that might be an issue for you that you know about, especially if you have very specific things. If your neurospiciness has very specific like triggers for bad things, so like you might really not like clarinets, the sound of clarinets. It might be like your one thing, and you need to be upfront about that because your coven might use clarinets in the initiation ritual, and it's the role of coven leaders to make sure that's okay. I'm on a tangent. I'm gonna stop.
Stop with the grammar on the sheet. You're killing me.
My
I'm sorry.
my health issues are like, stop messing around with the outline, both of you. You both started, then I joined in. Josie, why didn't you talk about pineapple on pizza? Like, that could have been a perfect opportunity to bring it
Fuck,
back.
it would,
God
yo.
damn it. I could have. Clarinet. What was I thinking?
Yeah, for people at home, like we have the outline on Google Docs, like you do, so we can all be looking at it on the cloud. And there was a lowercase m heading a section of the outline that I changed to an uppercase, and that upset James for some reason I don't understand. And he felt the need to change it back to a lowercase m, mostly to fuck with me, I suspect. And then I changed it back, and now Peter has involved himself, and Josie is just really confused about why we're doing this, because it's like 11 o'clock at night where she is.
I was just goofing around, and I didn't change it the last time. I just changed the font size so it looked lowercase.
Shame on whoever put a Z in practice. I'll take an S. That's fine. I understand, but a Z is right out. Yeah,
That was
thanks.
me.
Thanks, Peter.
I think it's to get back to the conversation. I think it's a very difficult question that I'm going to pose next. But if you know that you're bad at X, what are you doing to help yourself in order to be better at that? Going along with the remembering of the frankincense or anything else that you need to take to Coven, I have one bag that I take to Coven. And as I remember things, I put it in my bag. And then on the night of Coven, I put that bag by the front door, like literally in the way of the front door. last night when we did ritual, I needed to take my drum. So I put that drum there in front of the door because I know that if I didn't, I would forget it. I'm very anal about making lists. Like, I have a million and one lists on my phone for everything. And quite often, I have a coven list about what I need to take. And once that's in the bag, I'll like delete it or I'll cross it off. You know, so what are you, what are we as, you know, non-neurodivergent people and neurodivergent people, what are we doing in order to make sure that we are better in ourselves, kind of thing, or that we are alleviating, or that we are trying to alleviate some of the issues that our mental health poses upon us? And that can be a really, really difficult question, but it is really important because I think it was G earlier saying about you, like, the coven leaders are there to teach and to train, but it's you that does the work. And the operative word there being you. You know, we can show you what to do, we can set assignments, we can set essays, we can say we're going to have a group discussion on X, and you might think, oh, I don't know anything about X. Well, okay, what are you doing about that? Go off and read the Book of Shadows. Go off and do some research around the topic. What can you bring to the discussion? It's okay for you to not know things, but if you know something is coming up and you know you're not good at it, then the responsibility is on you as a student to find out the information that you need in order to be an effective member of that coven, of that practice, of that discussion, whatever.
When you said the operative word is you, I thought you were going to say the operative word is work, because so maybe there are two, because it is
Two
hard
operative
work,
words.
right? Like gaining, working on your self-awareness is hard work. And this is all that talk of shadow work. This is the shadow work, is when you're starting to work in the craft, regardless of what your mental health or neurospicy situation is, you're going to learn things about yourself. Your goal, at least in part, is to improve as a human being on this planet, interacting with other human beings, to become the best version of yourself. It's aspirational, but it's there. And you have to be willing to put in the extremely hard work of understanding yourself, understanding your quirks, understanding your faults, and learning how to compensate or do your best.
I don't think this was a controversial thing at all to raise, Peter, because it's the kind of thing that prospective coven leaders are going to ask you about too. If you do identify yourself as someone who is neurodivergent or someone who has any of these other issues, a maybe not a good coven leader, but it would be a good move for a coven leader to ask you what supports you have in place and how you are managing.
Yeah, there's always two sides to a coin, and seekers can hopefully sometimes forgive new coven leaders for not knowing what to ask. You know, if you are a new coven leader, you might not have all the questions to ask, but if you're on the opposite side of the table as a seeker and a coven leader hasn't asked a question which is going to get the information that you know you have, you know, maybe just offer that. Not every coven leader is going to think of every single question and every single possible outcome because, you know, at the end of the day, we're also human. 99.9% of us lead very, very busy lives with jobs and hectic social lives. I include myself in that as well. You know, if you're not booked, if you're not in my calendar 3 minutes in advance, then I'm not seeing you because my calendar gets full really quickly. So if you're joining a coven and the coven says that they are, you know, they've just hived, for example, they might not have all the questions. So if you know you have the answers, give the answers. Make sure that that is communicated in a way that you feel comfortable. You know, I think it was James said earlier about having the discussion somewhere on the course of build up towards initiation. You might not feel comfortable saying that you suffer from mental health issues or you've had mental health issues in the very first discussion. You know, it's not going to be one conversation, boom, yes, you're going to be initiated. There's going to be many conversations. There's going to be meetups. There's going to be maybe social time, maybe open circles, open sabbats. Bring it up. It's important that if it's not asked about, then you bring it up.
Treat it like a date, treat it like a relationship.
Yeah, exactly. Being in a coven and becoming a member of a coven is a lot like dating. And, you know, again, when G said earlier, sometimes the answer is no, not because of any one reason, but, you know, because you had pineapple on the pizza that you ordered. And I just can't jam with that kind of thing, you know, even though that's a very trip, you know, I'm trivializing it slightly, but sometimes it's no, just because it's no. And sometimes dates don't go well. And after the date, you think, oh, yeah, I really shouldn't have had that pineapple on that pizza kind of thing. Or, you know, yeah, I said that I was really into spicy food and we went to the spiciest restaurant in town and I was there just like, oh, this is too much. You know, sometimes after an interview, you know what the problems were.
Yeah. I will say, I can't speak for every coven leader, of course, but for me, it's relatively rare that a single interaction would put me off a seeker. Unless like something very clear comes up that I'm like, oh, we're not in a situation where, you know, this is going to be a good fit. Like, you know, somebody outs themselves as being homophobic. Like, I don't really need a second meeting to know this is not going anywhere. So unlike dates, I would say, I'm more likely to give multiple interactions, whether that's in the form of emails or in-person meetings or Zooms or whatever, to sort of suss out how the energy is mixing. So I would beat yourself up less severely if you did put pineapple on your pizza during that, or you did say something silly during the interview, right? Because there's odds are there will be multiple opportunities for that initial meeting. Is there any other advice that we want to give explicitly to coven leaders or anything else that we want to discuss as coven leaders about how to approach or deal with having seekers and coven members with mental health issues?
Yes. First, it's okay to have pineapple on your pizza. It's delicious. Beyond that, you're not expected to have all the answers all the time. You're not. And everything's not always going to be perfect in your decision making. So be kind to yourself about it and just approach the situation as best as you can and make the best decisions you can with the information you have at the time you make the decision.
I really quickly just want to mention medication. You know, if you're taking medication, you know, I'm not up at all on any kind of mental health medication that is available, really. The farthest I go is like ibuprofen and paracetamol. That's just about it. But if you're taking medication, make sure again that comes up somewhere in the conversation. If, for example, you are using herbs within circle practice, there are certain herbs that will interact with medications, even from an incense point of view. You know, you're in an enclosed space, you're going to be breathing that incense smoke in. That might have some sort of interaction, negative interaction with medication that you're taking. So, you know, somewhere in the conversation, if you are taking medication, just mention it. You can talk to your interviewing high priest, high priestess, coven. You know, if you're already in a coven, you can talk to them about your medication that you're taking and about the side effects. And, you know, you've got to take it at this time. It might interact with this, so I can't have that. I can't drink this. You know, if somebody was to come to me, a new seeker, and say, okay, I'm taking this medication, and they just kind of left it at that, I would say that then as a coven leader, I am partly responsible then to go off and then just kind of like do a quick Google search, maybe. And then kind of confirm that with the seeker. Oh, you know, you said you was on this medication. I just want to check that this list of five side effects, do you experience all of them? Do you experience one of them? Is it only during certain trigger points kind of thing? But yeah, if you're taking medication, make sure that's brought up somewhere in the course of discussions.
So, I'm actually going to counterpoint that a little bit. First, I do think if you're taking medications, you should ask coven leaders if there are any, like, aside from alcohol, if any sort of herbal substances or anything like that is regularly imbibed or you'll be required to imbibe. And then I would take that to your doctor and just confirm with your doctor or your pharmacist if there are any medical interactions that you need to worry yourself about. One of the most common medication interaction is grapefruit, and a lot of neurological or psychiatric medications have a a really negative interaction. And so it can lead to an accidental overdose because you're taking your medication as scheduled, but if you've been taking certain compounds that contain grapefruit or this compound in grapefruit, it will allow the substance to build up in your body instead of clearing the way that it normally does. And so those are the kinds of interactions that I think anybody who's taking medication should be aware of. It would genuinely not occur to me to mention my psychiatric medication, I think, if I was interviewing for a new coven. I've just been doing it for so long. Like, it's not part of, I just do it. I don't think it would, I don't have side effects that are worth mentioning to other human beings. I don't have, but I wouldn't keep it to myself out of a sense of secrecy. I just wouldn't really think that to mention it or think that it was the coven leader's business. I do agree it's the coven's business if I am having negative side effects, like, hey, I just started, this includes like blood pressure medication. Hey, I just started a new blood pressure medication and I've been getting dizzy when I stand up too fast. FYI, I might fall down in circle, right? Like that, you should tell people that. Hey, I just started an inhaler for asthma. Like, we're Alexandrians. We like incense. You should tell people that. So I personally disagree that it is incumbent on anybody to disclose what medications they're using, but I do agree it is incumbent on one, the person on medication to be aware of side effects and medical interactions, and two, to make other people aware if that medication is having an external effect on you. I don't mean that people need to know that like your libido is lowered, but people absolutely need to know if you might have a seizure or if you might fall down, because that's important.
I think it's a bit like when you need to tell your work about medications that you're on if they affect your ability to do your work. With your Google search, Peter, I'm okay with that. I don't feel okay as a coven leader to be like, yes, these are the exact side effects you will have because I'm not a doctor. Blood frightens me. I'd make a terrible doctor. I faint at the sight of blood.
Yeah,
And
if I can just clarify that for a second, what I mean is, if a seeker comes to me and says I'm on this medication and then doesn't offer anything else, as a curious person, I'm probably going to put that into Google search and it might come back with like, these are the five side effects. And if one of those side effects is, you know, if you stand up, like you just said, too quickly, you're going to drop. I'm going to want to check that with you throughout the course of some discussion just to make sure that if you are involved in like circle dancing or something and you drop, you know, that's then going to be a health and safety concern if everybody else is still in the movement of it and, you know, steps on you kind of thing.
yeah, I do understand where you're coming from there. I had something important to say about, oh, also, it's worth noting that side effects are really different for different people. So I've had issues where I have said to doctors, this medication is doing X to me. And they've said, no, that medication doesn't have that effect on people. And I've said, that's nice. This medication is doing X to me. I know it is. Like, I have data. Like, right. So I just think it is really important to recognize that. So people know themselves, people know what's working for them, people know what's not working for them. And those are the things that you should be honest with your coven leadership about. Especially like I do think that we keep switching between like it's like interviewing for a job and it's like going on a date. And these are two very different situations, right? With two very different outcomes. And I think they're both true. In the first regard, like it is a very professional thing, the first few meetings between seekers and coven leaders. At least I like it to be kept relatively professional. I'm not saying I'm not going to curse. I absolutely am, probably. But I expect a certain sort of professional behavior in terms of like I will send a nice email, I will check in, I will show up to my appointment on time. That having been said, it's like to a date because when you are a member of a coven, when you're an initiate, we've talked before about the intimacy amongst coven members. And that intimacy comes about through spending a lot of time together. So I can definitely see where, as an initiate of a coven who has put on a new medication, having that conversation with your coven leadership because there's a certain amount of intimacy. But I think that would feel a lot more natural to me because that would be much more like I was talking to a friend about something. Like a decision that my doctor and I made together, than divulging to my boss, if that makes sense. So I do think like the relationship changes, and with that changes the kinds of conversations you might have. But I think like the the last thing we should leave coven leaders with is like your seekers or any your initiates, whoever, know themselves and their health the best. And so we should trust them as much as possible to know their limits, to know whether or not they're able to be in circle, to know whether they're healthy enough to continue. If you think somebody's mental health has deteriorated to the point where you cannot trust them to make healthy decisions or safe decisions for themselves, then yes, like that needs to be a separate conversation. But I would encourage coven leaders to let seekers and initiates take the lead on what they need and do the best to be honest about where you can meet them and where you need them to come up with workarounds. Are we all set? What about in your personal religious practice? There are a lot of different feelings about having mental health issues and working in religious practice. We're going to talk about them. Since we just finished with medication, though, I do want to start with the there's a word and it like means not really myth, myth. Start with the myth that if you're taking medication, you can't do witchcraft, or that taking medication will interfere with your witchcraft. So, what are our thoughts about that?
I don't necessarily think that taking medication will affect your witchcraft. It might affect the way you work your witchcraft. It might affect the way you work with your coven, but I don't necessarily think that it'll have such a negative impact upon your magic that it won't be effective in the way that you wanted it to be effective. But then I wonder, I suppose the kind of medication that you're taking might affect the work that you're doing. My thoughts are not really formed enough because I've personally never been on any mental health medication, so I can't really speak from that point of view. So I'm speaking from a point of view of somebody who's never taken mental health medication. So I don't know. I wouldn't. I my gut feeling is that the medication that you take won't impact majorly on the workings and the hopeful outcomes of the work that you're doing.
I don't see taking medication as an inhibitor. It's an enabler. It is a positive assist. And in that, it can be beneficial to your witchcraft. If it helps you stabilize your mood or whatever that medication is intended to do, it can be there to help you not just mitigate life, but practice more effective witchcraft.
Yep, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I think if, for example, your anxiety or depression is severe enough that you're having a lot of difficulty staying focused in ritual, or if you're having a lot of difficulty entering a trance state, then medication can enable you to get back to a regular practice or enjoy ritual to the same extent that you used to. If you are taking, medication for ADHD, for example, and that helps you to be focused, it helps you to learn the ritual, then again, like that can really enable you to access ritual in a way that's more effective for you. I have known people who felt like taking medication did affect, for example, like their creative or artistic outlets. And I can understand how that would be really frustrating. I still think that being alive and being effective and functional in your day-to-day life, like being able to do your regular activities of daily living, being able to maintain a job, are more important. And that's a shitty choice sometimes that you have to decide between being able to be as artistic and creative as you used to be, or taking a medication that keeps you healthy, mentally healthy. But you know, you need to be mentally healthy in order to take care of yourself. So sometimes that's the choice you have to make. People who have bipolar disorder, and some other psychiatric illnesses who are on mood stabilizers probably feel more like the medication is affecting their religious practice or their witchcraft, because you're used to experiencing quite ecstatic states, and you're probably used to being quite open or having really intense experiences, and the mood stabilizers take that away. That's why these medications are notoriously difficult to stick to. However, again, being alive, being able to take care of yourself, being able to maintain a job and a state of quality of life are more important, ultimately. And a lot of times with time, side effects will become more tolerable, or you will find workarounds. So, but I, for me personally, being that I'm usually dealing with it, depression, anxiety, being on medication has enabled me to access ritual and my religious practice more effectively by keeping me focused and not distracted by like my running in inner commentary, quite as much.
I find therapy also really helps my practice. It helps me stay focused, just like you. It helps me be more confident in leading a coven, and not sort of getting bogged down or stuck or stagnant.
Yeah, I agree. I don't mean to emphasize medication. I think I have a real bee in my bonnet because it's helped me so much. And I don't want to say that I've come to the end of where therapy can help me because that's not true. But having been in therapy for a super long time, I do feel like it's helping me become a better person, but it's not resolving a lot of my issues any more than like I need medication to sort of meet in the middle. But I agree wholeheartedly that the benefits of therapy cannot be overstated, especially for this journey of self-acknowledgement and coming up with ways to counter negative discourse and sometimes like the same kind of meditation mindfulness techniques taught in therapy can be really useful in ritual. I would say it's really nice if you can find a therapist with whom you can be open about your practice, even if it's just to say like my religion is Wicca or like I practice witchcraft or I have a coven. My therapist is really sweet and hesitates kind of when she's like, oh, and like, is that affecting your like checks notes coven at all? Or like, are you still, or like when I have, issues that I need to talk out, she's like, oh, okay. And like, how is your checks notes like high priest helping with that? Right. It's cute. And I appreciate that she's making the effort. I acknowledge that some of us live in places where that might not be safe or true. I inc use If you, I don't see how you can practice Wicca and not talk about it sometimes in terms of with your therapist if it's having an impact on your life. So maybe use verbiage like, yeah, like I belong to a small church that mostly meets in somebody's private home. Like, it's a very small, like, and we do Bible study or whatever in order to sort of get a workaround and talk about things that you feel you need to talk about. I don't know, Josie, if you have a similar.
Oh yeah, just off to my naked Bible study meeting in my house. Yep. As long as there are no more questions, that'll be fine.
Therapist, why are
No,
you so worried about being nude all the time? Why do you feel this need to get
I
comfortable with being nude all the time?
None of your business. I find it's really helpful to discuss. I mean, I try to you keep things in broad terms, right? Like the details of Wiccan ritual are as follows. Like we still have oats, but yeah, I've found it really helpful. It's solidified for me, it's really solidified the fact that you don't have to be perfect to lead other people or to set a good example or to, facilitate change. That's been the biggest takeaway for me from therapy.
Awesome. So that's sort of thinking about the way that treatment can infect your practice. What about other mental health issues? We are a religious practice. People often work with deities in their personal practice. People often discuss like, oh, my patroness said to me, or I got a message from X God, or I've been working with my spirit guides. How can that be difficult for somebody with a mental health issue, and how can we sort of determine where the messages are coming internal or external?
I think when you have a relationship with a deity, whether that, talking from an initial point of view, whether that includes the deities of the Wicca or a deity of a personal practice, I think they are talking to you in your head. Maybe they give you some physical signs, but more often than not, you will get a brainwave. We might call it a brainwave, but it might be a message from the gods of the Wicca or a patron deity. And I think it's difficult to separate whether that is because of mental health issues, mental ill health, or just natural course of practice of witchcraft, of the Wicca. So if you are hearing the voice of a deity in your head, then yay, you're communing with the gods, you're communing with deity. I'm speaking very slowly because I'm forming my opinions at the same time. If those voices in your head are not the voices of deity, then I suppose that's where your medication comes in. That's where your talking therapies come in. That's when you seek medical professional help. Speak to your coven leaders, your high priestess, your high priest, the coven elders. I think the imposter syndrome also plays a part here. Is it deity that's talking to me, or is it something else? And for somebody again who's never, taken medication for mental health, or at least I feel I've never suffered with my mental health to a degree where, even though I'm an initiate, I can discern between, oh yeah, this is deity voice and this is something else. If that were to happen, I would at least think that I could talk to my coven leaders about it and then seek professional help if that's where I thought that the problem lied.
So in spiritual communication and teaching it, confirmation of communication is definitely a thing. And it can be as simple as paying attention to where the voice comes from, and that's comes from experience. But then there's things like using tools like divination, things like that. But a lot of old books on magic talk about charging the entity, spirit, whatever it may be, with confirming external to the self something through some sign, dream, etc., that communication has taken place. And that safeguard is put there for a reason. Beyond that, as it relates to possible mental health issues, I'm not informed enough. I don't know.
It's just me waiting to see if Josie's gonna. No. I one of the things I say to people when they ask this question is, does it matter a lot? So I say that because if you're being told something that you need to hear, if you're receiving a message, if you're embarking on a practice that you think has come from deity, and it's not harmful to you, if it's at worst neutral and at best, like actually really in your best interests to, start on a daily practice of 5-minute offerings because it just, adds a routine to your day or, research a particular deity or whatever. Does it matter if that came from inside you or from some part of yourself or your subconscious or deity? I would argue no. I would argue it doesn't really matter. If it's something that's going to be helpful, then do it. And if you're getting a message that is not helpful, that is in fact harmful, encourages self-harm or harming other people, or ultimately is gonna be to your detriment, I wouldn't take that message from anybody, not from a deity, not from myself, not from a high priest or high priestess. So I would encourage you to maybe start trying to think about it that way, just to let go of the expectation and anxiety around the issue. If you're getting negative messages, don't take them from anybody. Right. There's no call to worship gods who are encouraging you to harm yourself or harm others. That's the benefit of being a polytheist. We don't have to sign on for like you have to do whatever I tell you to do. That's not we're not there. And once you let go of some of those expectations, then you can use journaling as a way to look for patterns in terms of your messages. So we're talking about signs, but sometimes signs are subtle. So journaling can be a good way to notice. This time when I got the message, I had a lot of tingling in my like at the top of my head. I've noticed that's happened every time I've been told, to start doing a regular offering practice. I'm starting to feel like that is coming from a different place, for example. Divination can be helpful for this. I personally feel some divination methods are more likely to be yourself talking to you than anything else. Like I think my pen when I use pendulum, it's mostly me telling me shit that I need to hear. And so that can be a good way to do that, or tarot. But I would suggest again, like unless it's if it's negative, I would encourage you not to listen to it at all. But there are a lot of different things, entities, whatever, moving in the world. And if the message is something that's going to be of benefit, think about it, try it. We're not usually in the business of taking demands from deity, I would say. And I do think that's tricky. Do you all agree with that? Because it's very hard to say I worship a god, and also if that god tells me something I don't want to do, I'm not going to do it.
Worshipping a god, goddess, deity is not a contract to obedience. blindly. I like John Michael Greer's definition of a deity, that which is worthy of worship. But just because I find you worthy of worship doesn't mean that I'm going to be your servant in all things. That's not the way this works, and it's not how I, as a priest, approach our relationship, and that's just the way it is.
100% agree. I think you're on the money, G. We teach a lot about UPG to our seekers and qualifying something as UPG, unverified personal gnosis, but UPG isn't there to sort of harm you or harm others. And if it is, like you said, we don't follow it, you don't do it.
I have nothing to add to that because you all stole my answers. The only thing that I want to kind of circle back around is when, G, you were talking about the use of divination and about the pendulum telling you shit that you might have not wanted to hear. That meme that pops up quite frequently about, when you draw the cards and they are really clear and you don't like the answer, dot dot dot. I think I'll just reshuffle, kind of thing. That's all I have to contribute to that part of the conversation.
Thank you. The last thing I need to add here, my anxiety disorder requires me to say, if you have started hearing voices, that previously was not an experience for you. And especially if it happens without, like, not in just a meditation setting or not just in a ritual setting, whether it's they're saying good things or bad things, maybe see a doctor because schizophrenia can develop in the 30s and 40s. Brain tumors are a thing. If it's only happening in meditation and ritual, then I feel like, oh, that leads me a little bit more towards this is something that's coming about as religious or magical practice. But it's always good to just confirm that what's going on has to do with magical or spiritual means and is not something physiological.
100%. I want to piggyback off of that. I forgot what I was going to say because it is 1 a.m.
Sorry.
No. I just want to piggyback off of that. Something is a sign if you've asked for a sign and if you're open for a sign. Otherwise, it might not be a sign.
100%.
I saw a feather on my walk earlier. What does this mean? Nothing. It's a feather. Unless you ask for the sign, probably not a sign.
Pigeons are everywhere. Okay, excellent. So let's move on to how can we use witchcraft or witchcraft-related practices to improve our mental health?
Witchcraft, period. I was going to say full stop, but period always sounds more like done.
Would you care to expand upon that statement, Peter?
No, because it was a flippant, it was a flippant
I'm
comment.
going to call you on that.
I mean, like, it's no secret. I enjoy witchcraft. I enjoy Wicca. I enjoy working with a group, and that supports me in my mental well health. If I've had a shitty day at work and I know I've got coming up later and I know that I'm going to be in the throes of ecstasy with the rest of my coven mates and in the presence of the gods, that for me that helps. But it's because I like doing it. We know that if you've got coven and you're like, oh, I've got coven later, I gotta travel, I gotta bring stuff. Peter's asked me to bring the bloody incense again or the frankincense, and I know there's going to be poxy pineapple on the bloody pizza. If you're in that state of mind, it's not going to help you. So for me, I find joy in witchcraft. So that improves my mental health, that supports my mental health. Is that better?
Yeah, that's a nice save. Nice save.
Yes.
So contemporary Western witchcraft is full of practices that focus on self-development, interactions of the self, better knowing the self. That's not true of all forms of witchcraft, and it's not f true of all times in history, but it is a hallmark of our witchcraft. From a religious study standpoint, new religious movements in the West in particular, and non-Western new religious movements are understudied, so I can't speak on them. A larger percentage, just statistically, of individuals who involve themselves in religious studies as converts have some form of mental health divergency. And it's not a result of the new religious movement, it's their needs weren't being met elsewhere. And so a larger percentage of people went looking for something that is more self-focused. And so as a result of that, and the way we're set up, we're a religion full of things that can be used, whether it's what I call the Holy Trinity of witchcraft, using a Cajun analogy where they use bell peppers, onions, and celery as the base for a lot of cooking. Well, prayer, meditation, and offerings are the Holy Trinity. It's one of the first things I teach people prior to initiation, is this little subset of things. So you can cook up a whole world of wonderful personal practice with those things along as the basis.
Yeah, I would agree with that. For people who find particular comfort in working with deity or deity-based practices, since I mostly dabble in the Greco-Roman situation, I will say a lot of people are working with Dionysus, or Bacchus on this, as a god of madness, which I think is really interesting. People also work with Aphrodite or Venus on sort of improving self-esteem, on improving self-care practices. So those are some things to consider. Spell work for mental health is a controversial thing in that a lot of people don't feel psychology counts as spell work, and I think I disagree. I think if you put a regular if you put something into practice with the intention of a positive of an outcome, a measurable outcome, and you repeat that practice and you achieve that outcome, then I do think that's a form of spell work. And so I think there are certain spells that people could do for mental health that it could include things like positive affirmations, taking purificatory baths, and so on, that would have a positive outcome. I don't see why that's should not be called magic personally, but I think that's probably a little woo of me. What about other like meditations and path workings or meditative practices?
I think taking that time to meditate and have those meditative practices is a good thing. We can sometimes feel guilty because we're taking, oh no, 5 minutes out of our busy schedule just to concentrate on us, just to breathe, just to be present in this moment. But if you're using meditation as a form of relaxation, great. If you're using meditation and including path workings within that meditation as well, and that helps. Great. James just spoke about the fact that meditation for his pre-initiates, I think, right, James, like the build-up, that's really important. And if you know you struggle with meditation, then you do more of that. Sit quietly for a minute, build that minute up to 2 minutes, build it up, build it up, build it up until you can sit there and be okay with your thoughts and your feelings and yourself. And if you hit a wall, a stumbling block, that's just fine. We've all been there. We all hit those blocks. I can sometimes find it very difficult to sit in meditation and quiet the mind. It happens to us all.
So meditation has been proven that it can lower anxiety and a whole bunch of other things. Those are side effects of meditation. They're not universal. Not everyone has that experience. And if you're going into meditation looking for that one particular side effect as your goal, you may be disappointed. It may not happen that way for you. Meditation magically is largely about understanding how your own mind works. And so it can be extremely beneficial from that perspective. But results may vary on what you get out of it. But I think everyone can get something out of meditation. And if the mind wanders, if you try to refocus, regardless of how many times you refocus, you're still meditating. That is part of the process. It's not about perfect application. It's about the continuous practice of returning to the focus, whatever it may be. So you got this.
Yeah, and just to to be clear, if it hasn't been made clear from our previous episodes, the reason that we included this here, even though meditation is not always associated with witchcraft in any way, shape, or form, most witchcraft and Wiccan practices and covens encourage learning and practicing meditation and visualization as a way of focusing your mind and your energy on your task or ritual. There are lots of rituals and things that I've seen people try to do to alleviate their anxiety as well, like psychic shielding exercises, lesser banishing rituals of the pentagram, purification, as we talked about earlier, are all things that, while it's a little bit of a band-aid, might be a way to convince yourself that you have protected yourself and therefore alleviate some of your anxiety. So if you want to do, for example, like if you have an abundance or perhaps too much anxiety about home invasion, for example, you may want to think about working with certain protective deities and setting up a small altar by your entryway, and therefore will feel some relief that you've done something about it. Of course, also do mundane things like a security system, baseball bat by the door, whatever. Lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram as well, to protect your space. Shielding for yourself might make you feel a little bit more comfortable, especially in crowded spaces like subways and whatnot. So just consider those practices. There are also a lot of healing modalities that tend to have a wide overlap with Wicca and witchcraft. Things like Reiki,
Crystal healing,
thank you,
herbal
sound
teas,
cleansing, herbal, yeah,
sound
use of
cleansing, yeah.
herbals or herbal remedies.
Teletherapy as well, if you're into that.
Art therapy.
I think anything that makes you feel good about yourself, you know, if you like walking, go for a walk. You know, that might, you know, self-care might also look like sitting down in front of the TV and binge watching your favorite program. Kind of thing. I think anything that allows you to just kind of like just shut off even for 5, 10, 15 minutes, or in my case, just like binge watching all of the Harry Potter movies, films, because they are my guilty pleasures. And also, obviously, because we haven't mentioned it in a long time, practical magic. That's right. You guessed it, listeners. If you want to binge watch practical magic, you binge watch practical magic. I am with you 100% on that.
Do you want to speak more specifically, Peter, to Reiki? Because I know you've been getting a little bit more into it lately. I feel like I'm also Reiki too. I'm not sure if James and Josie also do the Reiki, but I haven't. Oh, excuse me, James, Reiki 3. No. Well, when we all get together, Josie, the good news is James can train us all up to Reiki 3, apparently. So that'll be great. Are you Reiki 3 too, Peter? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. Well, then, would
Me as well.
either of our master Reiki practitioners here like to speak about the use of Reiki in mental health?
I mean, one of the most sought after side effects of Reiki is relaxation. You might not subscribe to the notion that it is moving energies and releasing blockages in your chakras or anything like that. You might go to a Reiki session, which might last half an hour. Just because you can shut off and relax. You know, from my point of view, Reiki does work on many levels, emotional, spiritual, mental, physical. It works on a lot of levels, but I come at it from a Japanese point of view. I train with the International House of Reiki, which is slightly different to more westernized styles of Reiki, where the thought is nothing to give, nothing to receive. You're just allowing yourself to be open to energies in order to create that change for yourself as well. You know, it's not just the Reiki practitioner working Reiki on you. It's almost like a two-way street. So yeah, if you haven't had any Reiki sessions, maybe look into it. Maybe look into other complementary therapies as well. You know, they all kind of work in tangent.
The Reiki principles are an excellent form of affirmation or mantra that can be used by the individual, especially in times of needing to just plug back into a certain mindset. I mean, just for today, I release angry thoughts. It's normal to feel angry sometimes, is one of them. So it can be beneficial. Google them.
I'm also thinking about the intersection between mental health and pain, and people who have chronic illnesses like fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome, or even things like rheumatoid arthritis might find that where Reiki is helping with pain control and relaxation might also have side mental health benefits as well. And of course, there are also lots of apps. They're not necessarily witchcraft related, but there are lots of meditation apps that can help you with improving your mental health. I don't know if I put apps on here months ago or if somebody added apps today. Okay, do you want to talk about any specific apps, Peter?
No, you kind of hit the nail on the head then. As G just said, there are lots and lots of different apps that you can buy, mainly for meditation or mindfulness. You know, take just again, just taking that 5 minutes to breathe, being out in the sunlight, getting fresh air, making sure that you're taking care of yourself both physically and mentally is important because, you know, I don't think one is necessarily always more important than the other, but going for that holistic approach, you know, making sure you're eating healthily or eating properly, you know, check your alcohol intake, all things like this. But yeah, lots and lots and lots of apps. You know, if you can get an app for free, download the free one because I'm telling you, they do exactly the same as the £5.99 ones as well.
Also, post-COVID, a lot of workplaces have bought subscriptions for their workers. So you may just want to look into that.
Yeah, it's unlikely that there's going to be one thing that will quote unquote fix your mental health or make you better. And it as Peter said before, it is things happening in tandem that's going to be the thing. Reiki might help on top of medication or therapy or seeing your friends. Yeah, it's complex. There isn't one thing that's going to make it okay.
And also, like sitting in your car when you get home from work for 5 minutes is definitely a technique. Like that technique is valid. If you need to decompress in the car for 5 minutes, go for it. Anything that can help you.
Okay, well, it is very late. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Josie.
No, I was just going to talk about yoga.
Talk about yoga.
I like to do yoga and then just lie like jam on toast for about 20 minutes and then I'm all right.
Forget corpse pose. Now we're doing jam on toast
Jam on
pose.
toast pose, pineapple on pizza pose.
Love that. Okay. Well, it is getting quite late in Australia. And no, but I think we have covered most. Is there anything else that we want to talk about? And a longer commute, James. If I had a longer commute, my mental health would be even worse. As it is, it's not healthy. It's just an hour for me to think about all the things I'm anxious about every day.
I was talking to Peter, who's like, you got to sit in the car for 5 minutes, and I'm like, there he goes with his like 2 minute commute again.
When you get home from work after commuting, you don't sit in the car for like, sometimes I have a really hard time getting out of the car. My boyfriend's come home from work and been like, why are you still in the car? I'm like, oh, I couldn't get out.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point where like my partner has come out of the house
Yes.
and stood on the front porch and be like, are you okay? I'm
Yes.
like, yeah, just having a
No.
moment.
No, but I have put my meditation sessions at that point at times so that I come home and it becomes like a little mini ritual of I put my work stuff away, I change out of my professional clothes, and then I go sit.
I love that. Okay. So that brings about the end of this episode. Today we have talked about neurodiversity, mental health, and how those things can affect your coven work, the use of medication and coven practices, and how some practices can have a positive impact on our mental health, and also how coven leaders can help support coven members who are experiencing mental health issues. There are many initiates and seekers who have mental health issues, so having a mental health issue is definitely not a no in terms of initiatory Wicca or the more general practice of witchcraft. Make sure that you're as open and honest as you feel comfortable to be. Make sure that you're as open and honest as you feel comfortable and to talk to, oh God, make sure that you're as open and honest as you feel comfortable being. And talk to your coven leaders to seek professional help when needed. Also, take your meds. Do not stop taking any prescribed medication. Thank you for listening. As a reminder, also, you can check out Circle Talk for Witches, episode 3 of season 2, where we talked upon mental health as part of our In Bulk Llamas episode, and episode 11 in season 2, when we talk about initiation and why sometimes the answer could be no for valid reasons. Remember that you can find us on Instagram and Facebook as Circle Talk for Witches, 4 as in the number, X, formerly known as Twitter, as Circle for Witches, or email us at circletalkforwitches@gmail.com. If you have any questions, queries, thoughts, or ideas for future discussions, please do get in touch. We would love to hear from you. From all of us at Circle Talk, Merry Meet, Merry Part, and Merry Meet Again.